Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And all this week, we've been examining the state of pensions in America, private as well as public, with an emphasis on the shriveling of the private pension system, shrinking into often inadequate 401ks. We have focused mainly on policy questions, but we will end the series with some good old-fashioned investment advice. What should you be doing if all you have is a 401k? What should you be doing anyway if you're 20 or 40 or 60 or 80? Many people might have many different approaches. Ours for today will come from Gary Ball, director of the National Association of Investors Corporation, a.k.a. betterinvesting.org. Gary, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Our phones are open for Gary Ball at 212-433-WNYC. Investing for retirement questions only at 212-433-9692. And let me start with the basic question that I told the listeners before the break that I would begin with. Assuming I have no defined benefit pension, no traditional pension, just something like a 401k, how much do I need to save to retire on?
I'll tell you, Brian, it's usually more than you think. It ends up, I have found that you want about 25 times your annual expenses. So if you could come up with your annual expenses at retirement, let's say that they're $40,000, just to make math easy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're really $50,000. You got $10,000 from Social Security, and as you pointed out, no pension. You're going to have to supply that, make up that difference of $40,000. If you take 25 times 40, that's about $1 million that you're going to need as a nest egg before you retire. If you knew,
why 25 times? Is that an assumption that you're going to live for another 25 years after you stop working?
Well, good question. No, what it really is a lot of people will talk about the withdrawal rate. How much can you afford to take out each year? And in your early years of retirement, you probably don't want to be taking more than 4% of that nest egg and spending that. Obviously, later in years, you could probably boost that up. But in your earlier years of retirement, because none of us know how long we're going to live. If we knew that we were going to live to, 85 or 90 or 75, it'd be quite easy to figure out how much you need. Well, we don't know that. And so essentially what we're trying to do early on is take out no more than 4%. That obviously makes the assumption we're going to be able to grow the rest of our portfolio at, somewhat more than 4%, maybe 6 or 7% in order to, because over time you want to inflate that number. That 4% number needs to get inflated every year. Otherwise, actually, your standard of living is going downhill in retirement. None of us want that.
212-433-WNYC. Frank in Morris County. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. With interest rates being as low as they are today, and bonds are a typical mix, an asset mix with investments, why would anyone want to invest in bonds today with interest rates almost certainly going to go up, assuring losses on principal on their savings?
Well, good question, Frank. Essentially, the way I look at that is I do use for my safe money, the money I'm going to live on within the next 6 years, I do keep those in bonds, not bond funds, because, in fact, as you point out, if interest rates go up, the principal is going to go down. But when I buy a bond, I hold that bond with the intent that I will hold it to maturity so I know how much money I'm going to get at maturity. And as you point out, the interest rates are certainly very low right now, but bonds are probably high-grade corporate bonds. At least you can get more than you can with, we'll say, CDs or treasuries.
When you say bond funds, you're going to lose on the principal if the interest rates go up. Does that include government bond funds, even treasury bond funds, or these triple tax-free municipal bond funds?
Yes, it does. And I think there's going to be a lot of people very surprised coming up. When interest rates go up, any kind of a fixed income investment is going to go down. So you're right. You can have totally guaranteed treasury fund. And, well, the only thing that's guaranteed about that is the fact that at the end you're going to get, your $1,000 back for a bond. But, in fact, in the meantime, if you sell out early, if interest rates goes up, this perfectly secure treasury, you will not be able to get all your principal out. And so that's why I like to hold them to maturity so that I know what I'm going to get.
Emily in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
I just had a question. As a freelancer with no stable employer or 401k or any kind of retirement benefits package being put together for me, what steps should I be taking towards saving for my retirement?
Sure, Emily. Well, I think the thing that you will have, since you don't have a 401k, is you certainly want to have an IRA. You know, you should have either a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. I really like Roth IRAs. The nice thing about a Roth IRA is that when you take that money out someday, first it's going to grow tax-free, and when you take that money out at retirement, you will pay no taxes, so you're going to kind of not even care what happens to future tax rates, and they probably won't be going down either. If you're in a very high tax bracket while you're working, though, you may choose to have a traditional IRA, because the advantage of a traditional IRA is you can actually deduct that from your income each year, where a Roth IRA, you would not be able to.
Emily, okay. Thank you. So you can start setting up individual retirement accounts. But let me ask you a follow-up question about that, Gary. Is there ever a reason for a younger worker, like Emily sounds like, to not take advantage of a tax-advantaged IRA or a tax-advantaged 401k if she had a regular employer? I know that's counterintuitive, but I'm thinking younger people making little money might be in a lower tax bracket today than they'll be when they retire if they do well in their careers.
Which is all the better than for having the Roth IRA. If you're in a low tax bracket today, it also means the deduction's not going to be much for a Roth. But in fact, if the tax brackets go up later because they have done a good job, then it's great to be able to pull that money out tax-free. So, and that really is the question that kind of needs to be answered. Because in fact, if tax rates were absolutely identical while you're working, then after you're working, it kind of doesn't make a difference whether you pay the tax now or later. But if you thought tax rates were going to go up, you'd rather have the Roth. If you really thought tax rates were going to go down, maybe the traditional would be better.
Or if you're in a 14% tax bracket now, and you think when you retire, you're going to have enough savings that you're going to be in a 35% tax bracket, then I don't know, maybe that's slicing the prediction calculation too fine.
Well, it's certainly true that none of us are going to know what's going to happen to these things. But I think you, in any case, I absolutely think everybody ought to take advantage of IRAs. Nothing else. And if you also don't make much money today, actually there's a tax credit for people that are making quite low, and if they're managed to put money into an IRA, the government will even help with the tax credit.
Art in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Art.
Hi, thanks. I was just wondering, I've heard about annuities. My sister just actually has been talking to her advisor, and he's trying to get her into an annuity. She's about 68 years old. I'm just wondering, is that something to try or attempt at that point in a retirement?
I have personally never liked annuities. The problem I see with annuities is and advisors love to sell annuities, and you might guess why. There's great fees on them. And so I think it always seems to me if an advisor is pushing something, somehow I always am a little suspicious whether it's going to be good for me. So to be honest, I have never owned annuities. I would rather just annuitize things myself. You know, there are times that maybe a fixed annuity is probably better than a variable annuity. That's essentially when interest rates are real low, you might be able to get a little higher interest on it. But in general, I am not for annuities, and I really don't like variable annuities.
Art, thank you. Now, you wrote a piece recently advising people who are already in retirement, and he was asking about his 68-year-old relative, I think. And one of your key recommendations was to keep 6 years of living expenses in what you call laddered CDs. What are laddered CDs?
Yeah, good question. First, maybe even backing up, the 6 years probably for me, if you're a very conservative person, maybe you'd even want a couple more years. But in general, I don't think anybody ought to have less than 5 years. I mean, we've certainly gone through a tough stock market. And I mean, you just want money set aside. The laddered CDs are where, when I talk about 6 years, I will have a five-year CD, a four-year CD, one that matures in 3 years, one that matures in 2 years, one that matures in 1 year, and then I'll have a money market fund, which is what I'm going to live on this year. And the fact that you have that ladder means at the end of this year, I will have spent my money market fund. My one-year CD matures because I've used up this year's at the end of the year, and then I'll use that one-year CD becomes my money market fund next year. Obviously, the two-year then becomes a one-year, the three, a two, and the five down to a four. If I did nothing for 6 years, obviously I would run out of these CDs, and I have to replenish that, and I tend to replenish that when the stock market's up. Like we had a good year in the stock market last year, so I replenished my ladder.
So the But that gets back to what we were talking about before, because with interest rates and therefore CD rates so close to zero, why lock up your money for 5 years if you're going to hardly get any interest on it and think that things may go up?
Sure. Good question. When interest rates are this low, I will tend to look probably at high-grade corporate bonds. And I'm talking very high-grade because these are my living expense money. So I will tend to maybe look at a AAA or a AA corporation and buy their bond. Again, you're still not getting great rates, but you're certainly going to do better than you do with CD rates. And again, I think the thing that's important to remember here, this is your safe money. It's kind of like, well, what else are you going to put it in?
Right. There's a little more risk in corporate bonds, even if they're AAA, right?
There is a little more risk. You're absolutely correct, and that's obviously why you get a little higher interest.
Yeah. Joanna in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joanna.
Hi. I was calling because I'm just starting off in my 40s, and I had to use some of my retirement and haven't invested in my retirement for about 3 years now. What percentage of my salary should I be putting towards my retirement with my new employer so that I can have a comfortable retirement?
Well, Joanna, I think if you're, again, have had some things where you've had to use some money and you're kind of starting off again in your 40s, you're going to need to put, believe it or not, a lot. You know, and I found that when I was in my 40s, I was putting probably nearly 25% of my salary. I definitely paid myself first and everything. And so, again, without knowing all your circumstances, you need to put a lot in. You certainly want to take any advantage of any employer options like 401ks, and especially if they match it. When you're done with the 401k, you can still have an IRA. You know, you ought to fund that. Take any advantages of savings opportunities.
Okay. Yeah, they do match it. So take advantage of
That's totally free money when you get that. And I think the other thing that a lot of people do wrong is they don't put enough into the stock market. And, of course, the stock market's scary for a lot of people. They look back here at the few years. They say, oh, my God, look at the money the neighbors lost or friends lost. But
hey, the market's 11,000-something, the Dow is. The Dow first crossed 11,000-something, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago?
It did. But again, when we're talking about retirement money and even our 40s, you know, hey, you're looking at 20 years till you retire. Believe me, the stock market, I feel very, very comfortable that 20 years from now that stock market's going to be a lot higher. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow, next month, or next year, but I feel very comfortable telling younger people, hey, you can put it in the stock market. Because I'll tell you, if you put it in anything else in there, you will not have enough money to retire.
We have a caller who wants to add to our caller who was a freelancer to your advice about the IRAs and say, don't forget a KEO plan. Can you give us like 20 seconds on what a KEO plan is?
I am really not an expert, being just an individual. I'm not really an expert on KEO plans, so I really hate to talk much about it because I'm likely to say something wrong.
That's all right. I always respect the guest who has enough self-respect to say, I don't know, and enough integrity. So we've got about 45 seconds. You know, most of this series has been about policy with respect to private pensions as well as public pensions. With where you sit, do you take any policy positions on any of these things? Do you want to see tighter credit nationwide so interest rates on bank accounts go up? Or do you want to see a requirement for people to put away some money and have the employers match it, as Knight Kiplinger was proposing here last week, or anything like that that would be at the top of your list in 20 seconds?
No, I think the things that I like is I like anything that the government can do to encourage people to save money. I think the government's done a lot with IRAs and stuff, and I'm disappointed that, again, in a lot of cases, how many people don't have IRAs and everything. So I think that needs to be encouraged, and I have, and I really hope some of the credit tightening stuff happens. I mean, I think what we got ourselves into with people being able to buy homes with essentially nothing down and not being able to afford the payments, I think everybody was at fault in that. I think
and
the banks were at fault.
We have to leave it with Gary Ball from BetterInvesting.org. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And have a great weekend, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.